Well, we are continuing in the book of John, and almost back to where we started last year as we began to look at the book of John from Easter going forward, actually starting at Easter, going all the way back and now working our way back to Easter. But as I was looking and preparing for this sermon, and thinking about the book of John, there are two problems that arise, and they often go together. One is that we have to remember that the time scale is much longer than it takes us to read the account. So if you sit down and you start at the beginning of John chapter 13, and you read to the end of John chapter 19, and into chapter 20, it's going to take you a few minutes, an hour maybe a little longer, depending on how fast you read. And that's okay, the account doesn't take a long time to read, but the problem is what takes just a few minutes, as it does in what we'll read this morning, actually stretches out into a time that takes at least an hour for what we read to transpire in real life. Because not only do we read what is here, but if you read the other gospel accounts, you come to, in the midst of what happens in the passage in John this morning, there is a good likelihood that Jesus is sent somewhere in the midst of this from Pilate to Herod Antipas and then back to Pilate. And so what seems to take only minutes as we read it takes a long period of time. The second problem is that it takes a lot longer than the time we give to it. So over the last few weeks, we've narrowed in and we've looked at part of the story of John that probably takes about 18 hours from the beginning of John chapter 13 with the upper room discourse until his crucifixion and death. Is probably only a matter of about 18 hours. But yet we have spent several weeks looking at what takes place in less than 24 hours. Now, I don't suppose any of you want a 24-hour sermon, but to try to fit all of chapters 13 through 19 in 35 minutes just won't do justice to the passage of Scripture, nor will it allow justice to the sermon itself. Even if we just tried to look at chapters 18 and 19, which is an account that takes a little less time, it probably only about 12 hours, maybe 15 from the beginning of chapter 18 to the end of chapter 19, I'm pretty sure you don't want to be here for that long either. And so each of these sermons almost feels like that dreaded television announcement to be continued. Well, last week we looked at Jesus' trial, or the portion of it that mainly occurs between Pilate and Jesus. And almost all of the conversation that the two of them have, which is very brief, is in that passage of Scripture at the end of chapter 18. This week, well, actually last week also, as we were looking at it, I mentioned that really we get from Jesus' interaction with Pilate the way that we should interact with people with whom we are sharing the gospel. Well, this morning we're going to see the other side of things as we look at Pilate's interaction with multiple people we're going to see people's reaction to Jesus and people's reaction to the gospel. And when we do, we find that what we experience now, what we might experience when we share the gospel with someone, is not anything new, but rather it's the same way people have been reacting to Jesus, well, since the first century AD. And so we're going to begin with John chapter 19, verse 1 this morning. And I know it says 14 up there, but I think we're going through verse 16. And this is what John writes. He says, "Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, 'Hail, King of the Jews!' And they struck him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, 'Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for charge against him.' When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and a purple robe, Pilate said to them, 'Here is the man.' As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, 'Crucify! Crucify!' But Pilate answered, 'You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him.' The Jews insisted, 'We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God.' When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid, and he went back inside the palace. 'Where do you come from?' he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. 'Do you refuse to speak to me?' Pilate said. 'Don't you realize that I have the power to free you or to crucify you?' Jesus answered, 'You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin.' From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, 'If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar.' When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the Stone of Pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of the Passover week, about the sixth hour. 'Here is your king,' Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, 'Take him away. Take him away. Crucify him.' 'Shall I crucify your king?' Pilate asked. 'We have no king but Caesar,' the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus." And as we read this, as we think about this, we see different reactions, different ways that people reacted to the message, I would say, that Jesus was indeed the King of the Jews. The first reaction comes from the soldiers, and the soldiers are going to mock Jesus as their king. And so they take Jesus and they begin to physically abuse him. Part of the mockery of Jesus comes with the physical abuse. And John tells us that they began by beating him. Some translations would say scourge, and we could look at the Roman way of doing things, and the Romans had three different severities of scourging that they used. And the first one, they simply would beat them, probably with some kind of rod, not intended to cause long-term physical pain, but to punish, to show the criminal at hand that Rome meant business. The second type of scourging was one that was done with a whip, and it was done to inflict pain, and it was meant to leave long-term pain, but it was a mild form of a whipping. And the third form was, well, it was quite literally meant to bring physical pain, to bring physical harm, and at the end of the day, it was meant to, in some instances, lessen the time that a criminal would spend on the cross. Now, we look at this, and it isn't clear 100% which of those three John is speaking of. Most likely, in looking at it, John is speaking about the first of those, where Jesus was simply beaten, and Pilate's idea and Pilate's hope was that he would beat Jesus, he would humiliate Jesus with the with the beating, and that would be enough to satisfy the chief priests, the leaders of the Jews that had come to him that morning. And so the soldiers, this is what they did. And one of them would have been chosen, and they would have been the one who would have been beating Jesus. But when they get done with the beating part, they find what is most likely one of their capes that the Romans soldiers would wear, these reddish purplish capes, and probably not real purple, because purple was very expensive, very hard to come by, but they would dye them in a dark red dye that was in some ways more of a purple, probably, especially if you were to ask somebody like me. You know, I some days can tell the difference between red and green, yellow and pink. Ask my wife about yellow and pink sometime. She'll make fun of me. And it's okay. It's deserved. But they would put this reddish-purplish robe. They probably took one of their capes that they would wear that was used for different purposes. Sometimes they would use it for a blanket to curl up at night. Sometimes they would use it to wrap around themselves to protect against the wind. And, you know, it was one of the earliest forms of multi-purpose garments. You know, like today you go to somewhere and you can buy, I think they're baklavas or something, that, you know, you wear them, they have a hat and a face mask and all. You go to Casey's in the winter and they have them, and they sell, they're like 15 things in one, and I'm like, what? You know, kind of like the original Swiss Army knife of clothing. And so the Romans would use these, and they probably took one of those that either had been kind of discarded and replaced, or maybe one of them simply took their own off and said, hey, this is going to be fun, and they put it on Jesus as a royal cape. And then they twist the crown of thorns, and we don't know exactly what thorns they used, and that's not important. What's important, they wrapped this crown of thorns, and several commentators said they probably did it in such a way that the thorns, the biggest and the most noticeable thorns, were pointed out, representing kind of a ray of light. And they would put this on his head, and probably it still had little thorns that poked into his head. But it was set there to represent not the diadem, not the crown you might think of when you think about a diadem, but more the laurel crowns that were given to the sub-rulers of the Roman kingdom, but with rays of light shining off of it. And this is all part of mocking Jesus. They're making fun of the fact that he is being beat, that he is being tormented as the king of the Jews. And then they turn, and actually, if you read the account in the Gospel of Matthew about this short period of Jesus' trials, it says not only did they put a robe on him and a crown on his head, but they gave him a reed to look like a royal scepter. And so they took just a stalk of plant and they gave it to Jesus. And then once his royal regale was upon him, they then turned and they began to worship him as King of the Jews. Hail, King of the Jews. And they would come up and they would slap him or they would punch him and they would say, Hail, King of the Jews. And it was very similar to the cry, Hail, Caesar. Ave, Caesar. Ave, King. King of the Jews. Look at the mighty King of the Jews. And what they're saying is not, yes, we believe he's the King of the Jews, but rather, look at this humiliated man who claims to be the King of the Jews. Look at his power. Look at his ability to rule. Look at what we're doing to the King of the Jews. And then they began spitting on him as well. And it's all meant as a form of mental abuse. They're showing Jesus and telling Jesus how important they think he is. Between the visible abuse with the dress and the verbal abuse, they were simply mocking Jesus. And when you share the gospel with people today, there are those who will listen ever so lightly and mock what it is that we say about Jesus being the King of the universe. They will mock what we say about the fact that Jesus is risen from the grave, that Jesus is the Savior of the world, because they don't want to hear it. So the soldiers, I bumped the button. I'm ahead of myself. I'm just going good. The soldiers mock Jesus physically. The Pilate announces him as king. Now Pilate, when Pilate brings Jesus out from where he is to the outer regions of his court where the Jews are gathered, and Pilate and Jesus are up above the crowd, and he comes out still wearing this wonderful robe and crown. Oh, and I forgot to mention, there is a good likelihood that if the Romans were doing what the Romans did, Jesus had been stripped of his own clothes, and so other than the cape that he's wearing, he's naked. Which, especially to the Jewish way of thinking, was very humiliating to be there like this. But Pilate brings Jesus out, and he continues to humiliate Jesus and provoke the Jews. He's doing double duty with bringing Jesus out and hailing him as King of the Jews. He is the one who had allowed Jesus to be beaten, and probably Jesus was at this point, because of the beating, he was already starting to show the signs of disfiguration. You know, even though Pilate's intent with having Jesus beaten the first time was trying to make the Jews happy and to lessen their volatility, He still let Jesus be beaten so that he would be disfigured. And the fact that the soldiers were beating him as they were hailing him King of the Jews, John says slapping them, but probably more like slapping them instead of with an open hand, with a fist, because, you know, that's what happens. You start maybe with a slap and somebody says, well, that was good. Well, I'm going to hit him with my knuckles, and the next thing, I'm just going to punch him. Because that's the way that works. And Pilate had let Jesus be beaten. He brings him out in his regal attire for all the Jews to see. And then he says, here is the man. Now, at this point, he knows what the Jews think. They claim that he has claimed to be a king. Pilate has said he is the king of the Jews, and the Jewish leaders refuse to accept that. And so he says, here is the man. Jesus, in his beaten state, probably bruised and maybe a little blood and a few swollen places are visible, he's paraded out before the Jews, and Pilate says, here is the guy you guys claim is the king. Doesn't he look wonderful? Here is the man. It's meant to belittle Jesus. It's meant to provoke the Jews. It's Pilate's way of saying, I'm in charge and I'll make the decisions. And then, after a while, he makes one last announcement about Jesus at the end, and he says, the King of the Jews. Crucify the King of the Jews. Pilate is humiliating Jesus, but he's also instigating the crowd. But in the midst of this, we see that Pilate also has one last interaction with Jesus. Pilate has this interaction with Jesus, and he hears the leader's accusation. At first, they simply tried to come up with the littlest charge possible to get the biggest verdict possible. And Pilate, no, I'm not going to buy it. So now they come and they up the ante. Well, not only is he doing things that you should be concerned about, Pilate, but he's also claiming to be a son of God. And according to our customs, that's blasphemy, and he should be put to death. Now, that's what the leaders of the Jewish people were saying. And so Pilate comes back in, and he begins to question Jesus again, and Jesus listens to the first question and is silent. He refuses to answer Pilate's first question, kind of like he did earlier. Pilate asks the second question about where Jesus comes from and the fact that he could crucify him. And this time, Jesus answers and says, well, you know, Pilate, you think you're of great importance, but I wouldn't be here if somebody greater hadn't allowed it to happen. And there's somebody who's of greater sinning more so than you, the one that handed me over to you. And Jesus is telling Pilate that his authority, Pilate thinks he has, well, the backing of Rome, and Rome has all authority, so Pilate thinks that basically he has all authority, and Jesus says, no, you're wrong. You don't, you never have, you never will have all authority. But there's one who has greater authority than you. And then Pilate hears the claim about Jesus being the Son of God, and John says that he was even more afraid. And I like what D.A. Carson says, a Jewish scholar, says about this. Oh no. Yeah. We bumped something, Mike. You want to push that just down to the next slide? Oh, there we go. Nope, that's not the right one. That went two, I think. There. There we go. D.A. Carson writes, he says, to a Jewish ear, the charge that Jesus claimed to be the Son of God would be taken as a messianic pretension. And perhaps also, in the light of the continuing debate between Jesus and the Jewish officials, as a blasphemous excuse to claim prerogatives that belong to God alone. But to a Greco-Roman ear, the charge sounded quite different. It had nothing to do with blasphemy, but presented no threat to the Roman Empire. Rather, it placed Jesus as an ill-defined category of divine man, gifted individuals who were believed to enjoy certain divine powers. If Jesus was a son of God in this sense, Pilate might well feel a twinge of fear. He had just had Jesus whipped. In other words, what D.A. Carson is saying is, to the Jewish ears, it's blasphemy. To the Greco-Roman ears, it was a reason to be afraid. Because if you just weren't whipped the divine man who had great powers, he might use them against you. And Pilate had reason to be afraid. And Pilate, in this sense, becomes, well, I kind of thought about Jonah. You remember the story of Jonah? Jonah is on the ship, and there's this great storm, and the sailors throw everything overboard, and it's the sailors and Jonah and a ship. That's about all that's left. And they realize that Jonah's the cause, and he says, well, if you want the storm to cease, what you have to do is throw me overboard. And the sailors say, no way. And Jonah says, that's the only thing that's going to do it. And they pray to God and say, God, don't hold this against us. And they throw Jonah overboard, hoping that it will assuage the gods or God and the storm will cease. They didn't want to throw Jonah overboard, but it got to the point where that was all they could do. And Pilate doesn't want to crucify Jesus. Pilate doesn't want to get rid of Jesus. He wants to simply calm the storm. And so he's trying. But he ends up having to hand Jesus over to be crucified. Then we come to the third group. Pilate announced Jesus as king, and the third group is the Jewish crowd, mainly leaders, and the Jewish crowd deny Jesus as king. This crowd is made up mostly of Jewish leaders, and in fact, John says that it is the chief priests and other Jewish leaders that are there, but one of the things that we see is that likely Herod, or Pilate sends Jesus to Herod, and Herod sends him back to Pilate. And in this time, as this parade is taking place, and as the day begins in the city of Jerusalem, that the crowd sees what's going on, and the crowd is gaining mass. I think about a snowball going down a hill. And the snow is just wet enough that as the snowball goes down, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And so as the events of the morning transpire, more and more people are hearing little bits of what's going on, and they're trying to find out, and they're joining the crowd. And so when Jesus is standing before Pilate for the last time, the crowd has likely grown. It started with just the Jewish leadership and a few of them at that. But now the crowd has grown. And as the crowd grows, it doesn't just grow in mass, but it also grows in volume. And so a few voices make a little noise, and more voices make a greater noise, and they just continue to gain in volume, and Pilate is having to deal with the increased volume of the crowd, and it also is going to increase in volatility. In other words, as the crowd grows and the volume grows, the people are going to become more and more agitated and more agitable. I'm not sure what the right word is there, but they're going to become more and more volatile, and it isn't going to take much until they are just ready to explode. And Pilate knows this, and Pilate is trying to irritate the Jews, but he's also trying to keep the peace. He doesn't want a riot in Jerusalem. You know, that wouldn't look good for Pilate. You know, his job on this day, he has one job, and that is to ensure that the Passover celebration goes off without a riot. That's what Rome sent him there for. He doesn't want a large riot. And the crowd, on their part, instigated by the Jewish leadership, they want one thing. And that's to fit in. And so the Jewish leaders start yelling, "Crucify," and the crowd that's with them just joins in, and they all continue to yell, "Crucify. Crucify." And they can't get Pilate to go along with blasphemy. And so they once again, they up the ante, and they turn from blasphemy to sedition, to treason. They say now that Jesus claimed to be the king. They've been building up to this slowly and surely, but they get to the point where they claim that Jesus claimed to be king, and then they turn to Pilate and say, "Oh, and by the way, if you don't crucify him, you're not a friend of Caesar." In other words, if you don't crucify him, Pilate, you're not doing Caesar's work in Jerusalem today. You're not doing the right thing if you don't crucify him. And Pilate was, well, he was in a kind of a precarious position, because the Jews had already sent a delegation before to Caesar and complained about the way Pilate was behaving. And so if they sent another delegation, that might mean the end of Pilate's tenure in Jerusalem as the Roman prefect. And it might also mean that he lost his life. And Pilate didn't want that. And so when they start this, Pilate says, "Okay, I'll give him over to you to be crucified." It's interesting. Pilate says, "You guys are going to crucify him." They say, "You're going to crucify him." Nobody wanted to claim responsibility. At the end, they all wanted to see Jesus dead, but nobody wanted to claim responsibility for the crucifixion. The Jews, because, well, the crowd believed that Jesus was either a great prophet or the Messiah. Crucifying him might lead to people disowning them if they knew it was their fault. Pilate didn't want to crucify him because he knew that if he crucified him, he might end up with a rebellion on his hand, and that's not what he wanted. No rebellions, no riots. Let's get through this Passover feast and Feast of Unleavened Bread quietly and nicely. And so Pilate turns him over to be crucified. And in the midst of this, the Jews bring about this great irony. They claim, "We have no king but Caesar." We have no king but Caesar. In fact, John, in John chapter 1, said that Jesus came to his own, that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. And this is just an indication of that, because Jesus came to the Jews, to the world that he had created, and the Jews and the Romans together are going to deny the king of the world and have him crucified. And then we should look at a couple of passages from the Old Testament, but we don't have time. Judges chapter 20, or 8:23, and 1 Samuel 8:27, that show us that God was supposed to be the king of the Jews. And in this, the Jewish leaders create an entirely ironic situation. They will not enter into Pilate's residence because they want to stay undefiled so they can continue to celebrate the Passover, the Sabbath, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Yet they are willing to break God's law, thus defiling themselves, as they are doing it with a heavy hand. In other words, they're doing it on purpose. Passing an unjust sentence and bearing false witness. And also denying God as their true king, and denying their hope in the coming Messiah. But some people are going to mock the gospel of Jesus. Some people are going to make claims that they don't really believe, and some of them will know the truth and deny Jesus anyway. And it's been happening since Jesus' trial before the Jews and under Pontius Pilate. It's those three very things that got Jesus eventually hung on a cross. But Jesus, in his last statement with Pilate, he acknowledges that Pilate is going to be guilty of his crucifixion. But he says that there is one who is going to incur more guilt, and that probably is referring to Caiaphas, the high priest. But also, the Jewish leaders are probably there as well, as they've created the plot to have Jesus crucified. But before we get too high and mighty, we must remember that you and I are guilty as well. Not because we were there to yell crucify, not because we were there to bear false witness and false testimony, but rather because our sins, the sins that you've committed, the sins that I've committed, are the reason that Jesus allowed himself to be crucified. And this morning, our job is to give praise to the God who has forgiven us through the death of his Son. And no matter how people respond, to take the gospel message to those who are dying and give them an offer of a life through Jesus Christ. Let's stand as we continue to sing this morning.